The name Richard Stallman may not mean much to most of you, but in the open source software community, he is somewhat of a living legend. He is the founder of the GNU Project, which is an open source software organization responsible for the licensing of many of the Linux operating systems today, as well as a bunch of useful programs. And while he was going to college, he worked at MIT in the Artificial Intelligence Lab writing software. And it was here that he truly began identifying himself as a computer hacker. Now, the culture at MIT is known to be one of the earliest to adopt the term hacker. They take a lot of pride in that for whatever reason. And in fact, Richard Stallman himself described his position at MIT as being that of a staff hacker. As such, he is widely recognized and considered to be one of the founding fathers of computer hacking today. So, since this man is one of the more notable hackers in the circle of computer culture, I thought it would be a good idea to look to him for an authoritative opinion about what it means to be a hacker. In an article he wrote entitled On Hacking, he writes the following. In June of 2000, while I was visiting Korea, I did a fun hack that clearly illustrates the original and true meaning of the word hacker. I went to lunch with some GNU fans and was sitting down to eat some tteokbokki when a waitress set down 6 chopsticks right in front of me. It occurred to me that perhaps these were meant for 3 people, but it was more amusing to imagine that I was supposed to use all 6. I did not know any way to do that, so I realized that if I could come up with a way, it would be a hack. I started thinking, and after a few seconds, I had an idea. First, I used my left hand to put 3 chopsticks into my right hand. That was not so hard. I thought I had to figure out where to put them so I could control them individually. Then I used my right hand to put the other 3 chopsticks in my left hand. That was hard since I had to keep the 3 chopsticks already in my right hand from falling out. After a couple tries, I got it done. Then I had to figure out how to use the 6 chopsticks. That was harder. I did not manage well with the left hand, but I succeeded in manipulating all 3 in the right hand. After a couple minutes of practice and adjustment, I managed to pick up a piece of food using 3 chopsticks, converging on it from 3 different directions, and put it into my mouth. It didn't become easy. For practical purposes, using 2 chopsticks is completely superior, but precisely because using 3 in one hand is hard and ordinarily never thought of, it has hack value. As my lunch companions immediately recognized, playfully doing something difficult, whether useful or not, that is hacking. He continues, it is hard to write a simple definition of something as varied as hacking. But I think what hacking activities have in common is playfulness, cleverness, and exploration. Thus, hacking means exploring the limits of what is possible in a spirit of playful cleverness. Activities that display playful cleverness have hack value. He continues even further. Hackers typically had little respect for the silly rules that administrators like to impose, so they looked for ways around. For instance, when computers at MIT started to have security, that is, restrictions on what users could do, some hackers found clever ways to bypass the security, partly so they could use the computers freely and partly just for the sake of cleverness. Hacking does not need to be useful. However, only some hackers did this. Many were occupied with other kinds of cleverness, such as placing some amusing object on top of MIT's Great Dome, finding a way to do certain computations with only 5 instructions when the shortest known program required 6, writing a program to print numbers in Roman numerals, or writing a program to understand questions in English. And it goes on. But to summarize in my words, what this gentleman is saying about hacking is that it means to take a set of rules, work around them with a different interpretation, and experiment according to that interpretation to see what happens. In some cases, as with using a set of chopsticks, there's no problem with hacking. It's fun, curious, funny, fine. If you're going to write some code, for example, that makes Microsoft Word write your thoughts for you, that's also would be a hack, but very useful, in fact, and no doubt profitable. And if you're going to use your toaster to convert your videotapes into DVDs, great. That's fine too. However, drawing a line between hacking that's within the boundaries of good behavior and outside is very important. As we all know, computer hacking for the sake of finding credit card numbers or gaining access to somebody's network is wrong. And it's wrong because it's unethical behavior, probably falling into the category of being harmful, damaging, theftful, fraudulent, deceitful, and or greedy, or whatever else you're trying to do. Some hacking is fun and harmless, as we have seen, but other hacking can be deadly. The kind of hacking that I would like to talk about today is the deadly type. I figured it would be a little bit more interesting if we'd raise the stakes. And I'm not talking about chopsticks. I'm talking about your spiritual life. God has given us a set of rules to abide by. He's given us a way of life to follow. He's even given us an incentive to do so. We have a crown waiting for us if we can successfully live out this life according to the way that he has given us. It's very simple. There's one book that contains all the guiding principles for us. All we have to do is read it and follow the rules, right? Simple enough. Read the Bible and follow the directions. However, there's one problem with this. As human beings, we like to think and twist meanings around for our own personal gain. It's human nature, and many of you might agree with me when I say that we're our own worst enemies. Paul summarizes this very succinctly in a scripture that's very common. In Romans 7:14 through 15, he writes, "For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. For what I am doing, I do not understand. For what I will to do, that I do not practice. But what I hate, that I do." So what's Paul saying? He's saying we're hackers by nature. That's what we tend to do. The carnal nature in us wants to hack with God's laws. It's human nature to want to reinterpret them in creative, interesting, intellectually stimulating ways, so that their meaning may be masked by our own personal endeavors. And I'm here to share with you that God's laws are not given to us to be creatively interpreted. They are to be honestly interpreted through rigorous proof from the Bible. It is our job to do our best to figure out God's way and walk in it. We're not supposed to hack God's laws by reading them and interpreting them according to what we want to do as human beings. So I'd like to go through a few examples today of hacking within the Bible to illustrate what happens when God's law is tampered with. So I will start with the Sabbath. It's something we're all very familiar with, or should be very familiar with. And as we all know, it has been established since creation. And I'll start in Genesis 2, verses 1 through 3. And these will all be very familiar to you. Turning to Genesis 2, starting in verse 1. "Thus the heavens and the earth and all the hosts of them were finished. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made." So God establishes the Sabbath. He rests the seventh day. I'll continue just so a few more of the principles may be understood. In the Ten Commandments, turning to Exodus 20, verses 8 through 11. Exodus 20, starting in verse 8, it reads, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it." Okay, very clear. We can see that God has laid out some rules for us. We're not supposed to work on the Sabbath. Very well. One of my favorite scriptures about the Sabbath is in Isaiah 58. It illuminates a little bit more about how the Sabbath is supposed to be kept. So if you could turn to Isaiah 58, I'll start reading in verse 13, and I'll read verse 14 as well. Isaiah 58:13. If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your own pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. So putting all these scriptures together, we can see a few things. First, the Sabbath is the seventh day. Second, the Sabbath is hallowed by God. Third, you nor anybody who is employed by you should work on the Sabbath. And four, the Sabbath is for spiritual delight in worshiping God and not for pursuing our own pleasure. Now, there are other things you can say about the Sabbath, but these are arguably the most rudimentary points. We can plainly see how we're supposed to treat this day. And it's not a hard thing to do. We can follow these rules easily enough. It's taken us about 3 minutes to come to this conclusion. However, this is the only example where I don't have a specific example in the Bible of a hack. but we can think of numerous examples personally in our own lives where this is hacked by people, even ourselves. For example, mainstream Christianity has hacked the Sabbath law to interpret this day as being Sunday, not Saturday. Others consider this to be a loosely determined day of worship, where the placement of the day in the week is unimportant as long as the day of worship is observed sometime during the course of the week. However, we know that God says it's the seventh day. Even more common is to participate in the wrong sorts of activities on the Sabbath. I've heard people say, and I'm sure you've heard people say similar things, that they observe the Sabbath and they cease their work, using it as a day of rest, but they may go to the mall shopping. Certainly not work, right? However, that is seeking your own pleasure and certainly not within the realm of appropriate Sabbath activity. God's word is clear. The Sabbath day is for worshiping God in His way. The rules surrounding the Sabbath are not open for creative interpretation. We're not supposed to hack with them. And what happens when we do hack with God's Sabbath? God has consequences. And I'll just read from Exodus 31, verses 14 and 16. You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. Works will be done for 6 days, but the seventh day is a Sabbath rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Therefore, the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. Now, we know today that people are not executed when they don't observe the Sabbath correctly. Instead, the consequence is the same as any other sin, which is the spiritual death at the time of our judgment, if not repented of. So hacking the Sabbath by surfing the internet inappropriately, or doing whatever other activities, working, may seem innocent to us. It's just a little thing, but it's hacking. And God is very serious about this. And it's a crime worth deadly consequences. Now, I wanted to illustrate the example of the Sabbath being hacked. I'll move on to another one here. One of the most infamous hacks in the Bible, of course, occurs shortly after the command was given to keep the Sabbath holy. And it involves the Israelites breaking another commandment given by God, to worship Him correctly in His prescribed way. Going back to the Ten Commandments, I'll read Exodus 20, verses 2 and 6. Exodus 20, starting in verse 2. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands to those who love me and keep my commandments. Now, by reading this, we're quite clear about the fact that God does not want his children to be worshiping other gods nor creating images of gods, even if it is an image of the true God. So it is important, it's so important, rather, that it is the first of the Ten Commandments. Yet mere days after this event in the Bible, the Israelites and Aaron reverted to their own way rather than adhering to the rules laid out before them. This is what happened. If you want to turn to Exodus 32, I'll start in verse 1 and read through verse 8. Exodus 32, starting in verse 1. Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, "Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." And Aaron said to them, "Break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me." So all the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molded calf. Then they said, This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt." So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord." Then they rose early on the next day, offered burnt offerings, and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink, and rose up to play. And the Lord said to Moses, "Go get down, for your people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made themselves a molded calf, and worshipped it, and sacrificed to it, and said, 'This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt.'" What happened here? As soon as Aaron and the Israelites got scared because Moses delayed, they reverted to their old ways of worshiping God. Now, I doubt if any of the Israelites donated their gold earrings to spitefully worship God in a contrary manner to the way he declared to them. In fact, I think the evidence is quite the opposite. Verse 4 gives us a hint that they thought that they intended to worship the true God. The Israelites say in reference to the golden calf, "This is your God, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt." They're very aware that God had brought them out of the land of Egypt, but they worshipped incorrectly. Now, these words are nearly verbatim to what is said in Exodus 20, where God says, "I am the God who brought you out of the land of Egypt." And God is not a golden calf. The Israelites knew that God should be worshipped. However, they decided to skip all the details God had given them about how to do it. Instead, they hacked their worship of God, choosing to do it their own way. How did God respond? Verse 10 of Exodus 30 says how God felt about it. Exodus 32 and verse 10. "Now therefore, let me alone, that my wrath might burn hot against them, and I may consume them." I think you could say that even though the intentions of the Israelites were probably good, they wanted to worship God, hacking God's law and doing it in their own way made God quite upset. If Moses hadn't pleaded for their forgiveness, God would have most certainly consumed them. God's ways, again, are plain. If we hack with the way we worship him, it is not pleasing to God, and you can guarantee that consequences will be paid, especially since we know better. Now, another classic example of a hack in the Bible happened during David's time. The Ark of the Covenant was briefly in the hands of the Philistines during the reign of Saul. And while it was with them, it caused them a lot of trouble. So much so that eventually they sent it back to the Israelites so it was out of their hair. And that the trouble that they had because of it would leave them. When the Israelites took possession of the Ark once again, they stored it in the city Kirjath-Jearim, also known as Baal Judah, for about 20 years. When David became king after Saul's death, he decided that it would be a great idea to bring the Ark back into the city of Jerusalem. So I'll have you all turn to 2 Samuel chapter 6, where this is described. Going to 2 Samuel chapter 6, and I'll read verses 2 through 10. 2 Samuel 6, starting in verse 2. And David arose and went with all the people who were with him from Baal Judah to bring up from there the Ark of God, whose name is called by the name the Lord of hosts, who dwells with the cherubim. So they set the Ark of God on a new cart and brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. And Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, drove the new cart. And they brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill accompanying the Ark of God. And Ahio went before the Ark. Then David and all the house of Israel played music before the Lord on all kinds of instruments, of fir wood, on harps, on stringed instruments, on tambourines, on sistrums, and on cymbals. It's quite a celebration here, you can see. Verse 6, and when they came to Nashon's threshing floor, Uzzah put out his hand to the Ark of God and took hold of it, for the oxen stumbled. So the Ark is on this cart, the ox stumbled, it's going to fall, and Uzzah tries to catch it. Verse 7, then the anger of the Lord was aroused against Uzzah, and God struck him there for his error, and he died there by the Ark of God. And David became angry because of the Lord's outbreak against Uzzah, and he called the name of the place Perez Uzzah to this day. In verse 9, David was afraid of the Lord that day, and he said, how can the Ark of the Lord come to me? The hack in this example isn't quite obvious, and it will be in a moment. But it's a great example. David did have the righteous goal of bringing the Ark back to Jerusalem, but he wanted to do it in his own way with his own style. He had a brand new cart prepared for the purpose of carrying the Ark into town. There was a celebration, music, and dancing because they were rejoicing in the return of the Ark to its home. Had this been bringing anything other than the Ark into Jerusalem, it surely would have been magnificent. But let's take a look at some of the instructions that God had regarding the ark during the time of its construction. And I'll just read this to you. In Exodus 25, verse 15, it says, you shall put the holes into the rings on the sides of the ark, that the ark may be carried by them. Aha! The ark was supposed to be carried by men, not put on a cart and carried by an ox. So David hacked God's instructions by doing things his own way, even though he thought it would be the best possible way to bring it into town. After this tragic event, David must have gone back to study up on how he went wrong. And continuing on in 2 Samuel 6, we can see that he must have seen the error of his ways and corrected it. 2 Samuel 6, I'll read 12 through 15. Starting in verse 12, now it was told King David, saying, the Lord has blessed the house of Obed-Edom and all that belongs to him because of the Ark of God. So David went and brought up the Ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with gladness. And so it was when those bearing the Ark, carrying it by hand, of the Lord had gone six paces that he sacrificed oxen and fatted sheep. Then David danced before the Lord with all his might, and David was wearing a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the trumpet. David hacked with God's instructions by relying on his own intelligence, his own authority, his own taste rather than relying on God's instructions. The result was deadly, literally. This example vividly illustrates the fact that God requires us, not only that we do certain things, but that we do those things in his way. Taking a commandment, interpreting it in our own minds so that we believe we have figured it out, and working around it so that we can do what we want, maybe in an easier way, maybe to fit things in more conveniently, that is hacking. And as we can see, there are consequences for it. Now, the last example I'll give you also happened during the exodus of Israel from Egypt. Now, while the Israelites were in the wilderness, they became weak in their faith that God would provide for them. They complained about a lot of things, as we're aware of, but among their complaints was that of thirst. If I could ask you to turn to Exodus 17, I'll read verses 1 through 6. Going to Exodus 17. Starting in verse 1 of Exodus 17. Then all the congregation of the children of Israel set out on their journey from the wilderness of Sin, according to the commandments of the Lord, and camped in Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people contended with Moses and said, "Give us water that we may drink." So Moses said to them, "Why do you contend with me? Why do you tempt the Lord?" And the people thirsted there for water. And the people complained against Moses and said, "Why is it you have brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, "What shall I do with these people? They are almost ready to stone me." And the Lord said to Moses, "Go on before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel. Also take in your hand the rod with which you struck the river, and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock in Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it, that the people may drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. Now in this example, Moses obediently does everything that God instructs him to do. He takes the elders with him, he strikes the rock in order to bring forth water. All went just as expected here. This is a good example of obedience. There's no hacking in these verses. However, a little bit later down the road, a very similar situation occurs. In Numbers 20, I'll read verses 1 through 4. Going to Numbers 20, I'll start in verse 1. Then the children of Israel, the whole congregation, came to the wilderness of Zin in the first month, and the people stayed in Kadesh. And Miriam died there and was buried there. Now there was no water for the congregation, so they gathered together against Moses and Aaron. And the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, "If only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought up the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness, that we and our animals should die here? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It is not a place of grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, nor is there any water to drink." Sounds familiar, kind of a broken record. I'm sure Moses was growing weary of this whining from the Israelites. So he's pretty angry. And continuing in Numbers 20, starting in verse 6, going through 11. So Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and they fell on their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, in verse 8, "Take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together. Speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock, and give drink to the congregation and their animals." So Moses took the rod from before them, before the Lord, as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock. And he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock?" Then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation and their animals drank. Mission accomplished, right? Everybody's got water. No more complaining. However, as we'll see, that's not quite right. The people whine about not having any water. Moses consults God for advice, whacks the rock in anger, and water springs forth abundantly. The people get water, and Moses doesn't have to listen to their incessant complaining anymore. However, there is a hack in this example, and I'm sure you're all aware of it. It was pointed out to us earlier. And what did Moses do wrong? Even though water did spring forth from this rock after he had hit it, God told Moses to speak to the rock. Moses thought that he could do it better, maybe with more effect, more drama. However, he thought he could do it better. He certainly did not. He took God's commands, disregarded what God said completely. Water came out of the rock regardless, but that wasn't the goal. Little did Moses know, God was testing him and he failed. As a result, Moses had to pay the consequences. In Numbers 20, verse 12, we can see what happens. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them." Whoa. Moses hits the rock, just like he had previously done. Water comes forth, just as he expected. He really screwed up here. If he hadn't lost his temper, and had he obediently spoken to the rock like God had asked of him, he would have been able to lead the Israelites into the promised land. Now, if you don't think God is serious about not hacking with his ways, even with the small things, remember this example. He's certainly serious, even in matters that seem small. Now, the common theme in these examples is pretty interesting. In each example, we have rules that are provided by God for specific behavior. In each example, there's a goal which following the rules would accomplish. What's interesting in these examples is that in some cases, the apparent goal is still, in part, in some cases, accomplished. When David decided to bring the ark into Jerusalem on the cart, it did make progress towards that destination. In the example of Moses striking the rock, it did bring forth water, and abundantly so. However, the point is that in each of these examples, these individuals attempted to attain their goal without the rules, going around the rules, hacking the rules that God had provided. It reminds me of something I recently read. This is a little magazine called 2600. It's a computer hackers magazine. I picked it up a couple days ago at the bookstore and just doing research. And I was surprised to find something that fit in very well. On page 26 of the summer 2006 issue, a gentleman named Snayer, who's widely regarded as a security expert, he writes this. "A hacker is someone who thinks outside the box. It's someone who discards conventional wisdom and does something else instead. It's someone who looks at the edge and wonders what's beyond. It's someone who sees a set of rules and wonders what happens if you don't follow them. A hacker is someone who experiments with the limitations of systems for intellectual curiosity." Now, this passage, it was written from the perspective of computer hacking, but I think it pretty accurately describes the attitude of the people in these examples I've provided for you. And when applied to God's law, such an attitude, motivated by pride or vanity or rebellion, is very dangerous. We may not see serious consequences immediately, but God is quite clear that we will eventually pay the consequences, paying with our eternal life. Now, we have to remember that we have a long-term goal, a very simple one, kind of. And we are here doing God's work now so that we can be part of God's family and the kingdom in the future. And there is only one way to accomplish this long-term goal, and that's to accomplish the small goals right now without compromising and without hacking. We must not be short-sighted in the things which God commands. These small goals right now may seem insignificant, but they are make a huge difference in determining our future, and they're very important to God. We have to remember that every sin, no matter how small it may seem, is punishable by death unless we repent of those sins. And this principle is quite succinctly described in the Bible. I'll just read for you from Proverbs 16, verse 25. It'll be very familiar. There is a way that seems right to man, but its end is the way of death. You hack, you die. That's that simple. Now, there are two points you should be able to take away from what I'm saying today. God has given us a way of life to adhere to. And two, what you do is just as important as how you do it. From Moses' example, we saw that hacking with God's way caused God to prevent him from entering the promised land. Let us take this example to heart, learning not to hack with God's law, no matter how slightly, so that we may enter our promised land.